surroundings. The room was lit by a number of lamps suspended from a beam across the ceiling. They were in a line, laid out to cast their light directly down on a workbench that occupied the center of the room. It was a scientist's bench, with retorts and tubes fashioned from junk. A closed book stood on one corner. Looking around the room, Dean could see that there was little else inside, apart from a table that had not only been scrubbed clean down to the wood grain, but also had leather restraints for ankles and wrists. Just seeing it made Dean shiver with a barely restrained fear. His thoughts turned to the stories of pre-dark whitecoats that Doc had told him about. There were two other doors, one leading off the left side and one the right side of the room. The far wall, opposite the door he had entered, was a blank wall of concrete. Dean went to the door on the left. It was wood, with a bar lock that worked from his side. Listening up against it, he could hear faint sounds of breathing, sighs of sleep. Carefully, with infinite care lest he cause a sound, Dean removed the bar from its brackets, placed it against the wall, then opened the door. The room was in darkness, broken by a beam of light that streaked across the floor from the open door. Dean stepped into the room and saw that there were five sets of bunk beds. Small children occupied eight of the beds. Without disturbing them, Dean could see that they were all blonde, but not if they were male or female. One thing for sure, though, he was certain that if he could have spread open their eyelids, he would have seen that all of their eyes were blue. Unwilling to awaken them and cause a disturbance that would alert anyone to his presence, Dean crept out of the room, shutting the door carefully and quietly behind him, before replacing the bar. The other door beckoned to him. Dean shook his head to clear it, to focus his mind as he crossed the workroom floor. Why was Jenna producing little blonde children? For he was sure that the Baron's wife was behind this. Come to that, how was she doing it? He paused by the workbench and examined some of the tubes standing on the pitted and scarred surface. He tentatively sniffed at the chemicals in the tubes and hurriedly looked away, nose wrinkled and eyes smarting at the tart and acrid fumes. They were dyes of some kind. Dye for the children's hair, and perhaps for injection into their eyes? He reached the other door. It had a bar lock similar to the opposing door, and as Dean removed the bar, he could hear whimpering from within the room, whimpering from more than one voice, mingled with the low hum of a hard fuel-driven generator. What it was powering, he couldn't imagine. Neither did he want to imagine what was whimpering. He would find out soon enough. Laying the bar up against the wall, Dean carefully opened the door. The room beyond was well lit by fluorescent tubes powered by the generator. Old-tech equipment with digital displays and flashing lights stood against one wall, flanked by the generator. Cables and thinner wires ran from the equipment toward two beds that were against the opposite wall. The whimpering came from the beds. The two beds stood side by side, old hospital beds with perspex sides raised above mattress level, obviously rescued from the remains of the city above ground. The perspex was scored and scarred, which made it difficult for Dean to see what was lying on the beds, whimpering pitifully. Apprehensive, and feeling the bile of anticipation rise in his throat, Dean advanced toward the beds. When he was able to see over the perspex, he wished he hadn't been so anxious. How the creatures in the beds had been conceived and birthed, he couldn't begin to imagine. But it certainly hadn't been a natural process. They were children, but only just. Their heads were too large for the stunted and twisted bodies, with overly large foreheads to which clung wisps of hair. Both had small torsos with shortened arms and only vestigial fingers. The legs were withered. They looked almost identical, like twins or clones. They were pincushions for a number of tubes that fed liquid into them, then extracted it. They were obviously the results of an ongoing and not particularly successful experiment. They were still human beings, and their eyes showed constant pain. The bile rose in Dean's throat, choking him. He tried not to make any noise as the creatures looked at him with fearful eyes, and yet begged for pity. He couldn't face them any longer. Dean turned on his heel to leave, but was brought up short by the figure looming in the doorway. Silently, and with an infinite stealth, his pursuer had encroached on the room. Harvey. The sec chief stood easily, hand on hip, scratching his head. Neither hand was anywhere near the snub-nosed Colt Magnum carry that was his chosen blaster. This was snug to his hip in its combat holster.
Well, son, looks like you've really blown it this time. You should have been more careful, like your pa. If you ever stumble on something, you don't pry and you don't snoop. That way you might actually get to stay alive.
Dean was aware of his Browning high power. He could feel its shape and weight. Could he outdraw the sec man? Certainly, his body weight was much more poised and alert, whereas Harvey seemed much too relaxed. Uncannily, it was as though the sec man could read his thoughts as he lowered the hand that had been scratching his head.
Now, you see, you could try and draw, maybe risk beating me. But if you do, then you'll have awakened the whole vill and have to answer why you've chilled the sec chief. And that wouldn't be easy, because my Jenna, well, she can wrap that old fool alien around her pinky.
Dean made no move, but neither did he relax. His adrenaline was racing, and time seemed to be moving at half speed as he frantically searched for a way out. His eyes probed past the sec chief to the room beyond. It seemed empty.
You're right. I'd have to be triple stoop to try and chill you. But on the other hand, you'd have to be more than that to chill me. You know there'd be trouble if I went missing.
You forget that you're on my territory, boy. Your father and his few rad-blasted scum against the whole of Raw? What kind of odds are those?
Odds I'll have to take.
Dean conserved his energy for a spring forward. He had estimated that one break, like starting a sprint from his training at the Brody School, would propel him forward with enough force to catch the sec man in the midriff and push him back. Harvey would land, hopefully winded, on his back. Dean would roll forward from the thrust and be on his feet first, heading for the corridors. His only hope was to head back to his father and his companions. Harvey would then be in a difficult position. He may have to act covertly, which would hamper his ability to do them harm, especially if they were on triple red. All these thoughts raced through the boy's head in a fraction of a second as he threw himself forward, lowering his head to catch the sec man off guard and in the solar plexus. But Dean was already in a forward roll, his legs cutting through the air, using the prone Harvey as a cushion against his impact on the hard floor. The young Carter sprang to his feet, almost stumbling as his ankle twisted on the uneven floor, but managing to stay erect with only a sharp knife of pain too brief to stop him to mark the stumble. He had made two steps to the door, leaving the floundering sec chief twisting on the floor, cursing and trying to pull his Colt from where the holster had slipped on his belt, almost underneath him, when he was brought up short by a wave of paralyzing fear. Dean had seen rabbits before they were chilled, frozen in a sudden burst of light. He had seen a muty fox, so terrified at being cornered, that its muscles were almost frozen in rigor before its chilling. But he had never experienced such a crippling fear, nor did he think it was possible for a human being. But now he knew differently. Try as he might, he was unable to move a muscle voluntarily. They trembled and quivered in his legs as though they would at any moment dissolve to liquid. Although he could hear the cursing sec chief struggle to his feet, although he could hear him free his blaster, still Dean Carter was frozen, unable to move from his absurd position of being in mid-run. And it wasn't just his being frozen, it was the fear itself. He had been scared before, terrified even. His father always told him that fear could be a positive thing in a dangerous situation. It would help you clarify and prioritize when things were tough. But this was a different kind of fear. This was a blind, all-encompassing terror that made it impossible for Dean's mind to focus on one thing, flitting as it did from moment to moment between abject terror at dying, fear of torture, and even a ridiculous fearfulness at wetting himself in his terror, feeling the urine flow down his leg.
Well, I'll be fucked by a muty leper. The little fucker can't even move. And he's pissed himself. I gotta hand it to you, babe.
Dean was confused. Who was Harvey talking to? And then, she entered the room. Although Dean couldn't conquer the fear, or think clearly through it, a part of his brain suddenly realized why he was so scared. It was Jenna. The Baron's muty wife stepped through the outer door. She had obviously been waiting for Harvey to clean up the situation, but since he had failed, she had decided to step in herself. Both Jack and Christy had mentioned her obvious feely ability, And now Dean was aware of how strong it could be when she chose to exercise the faculty. Her sharp, pointed face was clouded with anger as she stood in front of the boy. The raven eyes glittered with nothing so much